welcome back.
Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!
BRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to us anyway. To BRB UK. It's episode 576, and this is our first actual real proper show of the year. I'm Dan, I'm one of your hosts. Nice to be back. I've mildly forgotten how this works. Talking of mildly forgetting how things work, Tim, hello.
Hello.
What have you mildly forgotten how thing what works stuff? I'm having trouble with words.
Everything, the world,
right. Okay.
Words.
Okay.
Going
good.
To work. But
excellent.
Generally things beginning with W.
Right. Not going to... You'll be pleased to know I'm not going to run the whole gamut of things that begin with W that Tim may have forgotten how to do.
Phew.
Coleman!
Hi!
How are you? What things not beginning with the letter W have you forgotten how to do?
Forgotten how to do?
Yes.
Well, the actual hosty part of the podcast, because
yes.
While we are away, as I explained while we were doing our filler episodes... We usually kind of do like two another week, spread them out. I'll get all the editing done. We all have a nice bit of time off. I was so busy that I ended up doing like the regular schedule, just doing one the night before it went out and trying to quickly rush things out and get them done, get her done. So the editing part down, absolutely fine. We got that. That's absolutely done.
It's just a speaking
forgot how
into
to do
a
the
microphone.
Actual speaking.
Yeah. It's been a challenge.
Yeah.
And this is because I heard this because I've got stuck into the Traitors for my sins. It's a guilty pleasure.
Again.
Yeah, I watched series one. Series two's got its claws into me.
I like series one.
The
card game of the same name is not good, by the way. Don't buy the card game.
No.
Card game, useless.
They got a podcast that also airs on BBC Two. I don't know how to say it. It's like a visual podcast or something. So that's what we're going to start calling ourselves. Sounds quite fancy.
We're a visual
it's good enough
podcast.
For Ed Gamble. It's good enough for me. Not Ed Gamble. you know, it is actually.
Speaking
Ed
of that show, can I just try something for the
yes.
benefit of YouTube watchers?
Please.
Yep.
One sec. See if this works. Point of view on my camera. You are Claudia Winkleman.
Nice. Nice.
Which one of us is the traitor?
All of us.
Okay.
We've just done it very wrong. But now we can't kill anyone, so it's all a bit tedious. So it's just going to be us sitting around going, oh, I should do something today. Should probably earn some money, shouldn't we? Let's do a mission. And today's mission is episode BRB UK, episode 576. There we go. Well, we've had plenty of time, allegedly, to play stuff over the holidays, but I think we've all either been far too busy or died several times over. Tim and I spent most of the holiday unwell, completely
100%
unrelated.
The holiday.
So I'm kind of still playing catch up with games and stuff. But yeah, I think we managed to sneak some stuff in before. But you had a review code, Tim, and I'm going to put you first because in true spirit of BRB UK, we all know you're incapable of speaking quickly. So let you go first and then we'll just fill in the time that's left, all 30 seconds of it.
Well, I would save this for a VRB because it's a VR game that I've been playing for review, but Kev, my co-host, is currently unwell. There might be a little bit of an extended time. We were going to try and record one a bit sooner, but yeah, Kev is unwell. So get well soon, Kev, is also a message I'll put out there.
Yeah.
But I have been playing, or I have played to completion, a game called Toy Trains VR.
Right.
Which is...
What's that about?
A lot of people have described it as a cozy game. It's very much a little... kind of very chilled puzzle game where you're basically playing with a train set.
And then you go out and axe murder people.
Yeah. No. I actually thought there was going to be a dark twist at the end, but there's no dark twist. Spoilers.
No axe murdering?
But it's all very nice, very quite twee.
I have a question.
Yes?
Why don't you classify axe murdering people to death as something a bit dark, Tim? Because that's clearly the point of this game is you are an axe murderer.
It would be. No. Well, I mean,
you might be. No, you are.
You might just be a mild-mannered Scotsman, as our previous host of podcast, Mr. John Brady.
Oh, no, he's totally an axe murderer.
A fan of playing with his train sets.
He's an axe
and
murderer
this is,
as well.
This
he's
is very much that as well. Well,
right.
He might have married an axe murderer, being all Scottish-like and everything. But anyway,
Am I helping this review, by the way?
No, not at all.
Excellent, good.
But this is a very cozy
game.
Probably
dragging it out.
The whole kind of story elements of it are all presented in the... You are basically... The game takes place in the attic of your grandparents. You're playing with this toy train set, and then you're periodically getting... in between each levels, you receive a postcard from your parents who have left you to stay at your grandparents for a while and are kind of communicating with you about their travels. But yeah, that's why I kind of thought it might go a bit dark, but it doesn't.
Right.
But it's very much a kind of, as I said, cozy kind of game where you are, the puzzle is all about just like pathfinding for a train set by like finding the path in the environment that links various houses to a main hub bit of the level. And that hub bit changes from level to level, but it's always something that kind of you want to connect all the houses to for a reason. It might be because it's a fire station and some of the elements are on fire. It might be just a train station and they all want to connect to that. And it's various other like bits like that. But you might have more than one track per level, and there might be intersecting tracks or tracks that have to have a bridge to go over. As you progress through the game, you unlock more train parts, more kind of decorative pieces that you can add around the track afterwards.
I do like a decorative train.
You do like a decorative train. Well, they're not so much bits to the train, but they are bits to the environment. So you'll be like farmland or a fountain or various other bits you can use for decorative purposes. But they don't really serve any purpose and you don't really have to use them. They're just
purposes,
there for
decorative purposes. You just said they had a decorative
purpose.
Exactly. Then you said they've got no purpose. Completely well, negating
glorious decorative purpose.
No in-game scoring or anything like that, basically.
But it's still got a purpose. It's decorative.
Yes, yes, yes.
Why say it's not that? Why you say it's got no purpose? I have to say it's decorative. It's got a decorative purpose, Tim. Jesus.
You serve no decorative purpose.
No, I don't. And I'm okay with that.
But yeah, like there are 10 levels. They get slightly longer as you go. And the last couple of levels are a bit more freeform where you're kind of left to your own devices with all the puzzle pieces. It is a game. It's like £15 to £16. As I said, I got a review code for this. I got it early, so I was able to play it over Christmas. It came out, I think, this week. I've been playing on PSVR 2. It is also available on MetaQuest and Steam VR.
Okay.
I would say that overall, it's a nice game and I enjoyed my time with it, but I think it either has to do one of two things. I either think you have to pick it up for a bit cheaper, and I'd say less than £10 or around half price of what it is. I think that's okay.
Okay.
Or it could do with a bit more game. And I don't know if they're planning on adding anything to the game as it goes. But it feels like the first 10 levels that you play through are almost, well, actually, the first 9 levels, to be a bit more kinder, the first 9 levels feel like a tutorial for the 10th level, and then you finish the 10th level and the game ends. And it feels like it could do with another 5 to 10 levels of that slightly more freeform type of level, where you can use all the pieces that you get and the slightly bigger, more expansive puzzles. But as I said, it's a cozy game. It's easy to play. It's kind of nice and relaxing. A lot of people mentioned the fact that it's by the ex-devs of Superhot, and that's kind of accurate, but it kind of glosses
over the
fact... Another
murdering simulator.
It's not the developers of Superhot and this is their next game. It's... Developers that worked on Superhot VR have moved on to a different company,
ex Superhot developers.
Yeah. And I don't know, but I imagine there may be, it might have been the people that they hired on to do the VR version of Superhot that then went on to make their own VR game. And it's very different from Superhot. And I don't think it necessarily like, in the way that Superhot was like, this is, you know, why you should have VR. This is kind of proves that you should have a VR headset for this type of game. I don't think it quite does that, but it does feel like the game is better for being in VR, and without VR, it would lose some of its magic. But there's a few limitations in terms of I found it really difficult to play whilst remaining seated 100% of the time. Like, you had to kind of stretch in to go to the back of the levels, and you couldn't kind of rotate the table easily. The okay. one thing I did like is that you can like grab the in-game menus and move them around. So that there's a kind of menu of different pieces that you're literally plucking the pieces from. And that you can pick up and move around. And the little there's a little hot air balloon with a man that talks to you, and you kind of pull tags to hear what people are saying to you. So you pull the tag on the hot air balloon, and it can give you hints and stuff throughout the game. And you can pull that hot air balloon around the environment, so it's easier for you to pull. But I thought it was weird that you couldn't manipulate the table in any way, and that made it... it wasn't a massive problem for me, but I could see that someone that was restricted to just playing sat down, this game would be more awkward to play, especially when you're trying to access a back of the table type thing. But generally, yeah, it was quite nice. Like, the different track pieces and stuff, you can... There's a little bin underneath the table that you can put them in to tidy them away, or you can just do what I did and chuck them when you don't want them.
Well, you just kind of hoon it into the distance and make it someone else's problem.
Exactly.
All right.
Like axe throwing.
But once you've actually kind of solved the puzzle, you set the little train and the carriage down on the track, and then it's got a little pull thing, a little kind of ripcord pull that you pull upwards on, and it sort of has a green line that goes around and ticks off all the things to denote the fact that you've solved it properly. And then you pull that, and then that sets off whatever the thing that you're linking to in the middle of the environment then has a pull tag on that you can pull. And it's got, most levels have got like various stages where that progresses as you link more houses to it. But as you get through the game, you can kind of go, well, I know there's going to be more houses in the second stage of this, so I'll just make the track more expansive to start with, and that will probably solve like multiple stages at once. And sometimes it adds houses in areas that you wouldn't expect, or is a bit harder to get to, and then you have to reform things. But generally, yeah, that's probably the way to go, sort of thing.
So is it like kind of you've got a limited number of pieces and you've got to find the only solution there is, or is it a bit more just kind of free for all?
It's a bit more freeform, and that is both like good and bad. It makes it so that it is a bit more of a, you know, a cozy, relaxing game where it's not so stressful. But at the same time, like it makes it so the puzzles aren't very challenging, and so it takes away a bit of the challenge of what you're doing. Like the final level, it really wants you to make sure that you're using a bridge as a component to kind of solve the puzzle. And I really wanted to brute force it to see if I could solve that puzzle without using a bridge. And I found a way of doing it. And that was that was me enforcing an extra set of rules on it that it didn't really have.
And they don't kind of put that kind of creativity behind trophies or anything like that. It's
seemingly
you're not rewarded for that's a shame.
I didn't investigate to see if I got all the trophies in my first go, but you can go back and do any of the levels at any time. And I just haven't seen if I've 100%ed it. I don't think I got a platinum, but I don't know if there's just not a platinum in the game. I'm not sure about that. But yeah, as I said, I enjoyed my time with the game. I do think it needs to either be cheaper, or they need to add a bit more game, and then it would be a bit of an easier recommendation. But if you like playing with, you know, toy train sets, then it might appeal to you even more, basically.
Nice. And that's about 15 quid, is it?
Yeah. Okay. Between 15 and 16, depending on what platform you're picking it up on, I think.
Alrighty. And that's out on the Meta Quest of the various flavors, PSVR 2 and Steam VR. Yeah?
Yeah.
Splendid.
I like trains.
Chew, 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 Coleman.
Chew, chew.
Chew, chew, mother flipper.
Yeah. Chew, chew, mother fudger.
What's next? What are we talking about next?
I think we should make Tim do another one, because that way we know he's finished all of his talking and we can just chat away with giddy abandon, Coleman.
Hurrah!
Hurrah! Hurrah! So, Tim, you managed to sink some time into it. This is a game I really want to play. I haven't had the kind of time to get stuck into yet, but it is RoboCop Rogue City, which many people are kind of saying is one of the best licensed FPSs for a long while.
Yes,
since Terminator.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you guys remember, but I spoke about
a lot of competition.
And
in space,
I can't remember what the name of the game was. I keep on thinking it's Terminator Salvation, and that was the name of the movie rather than
the very
thing,
bad movie.
Terminator.
It's the Terminator game that was based off the last film, but not off the last film's story, but the story that was left behind, erased by the events of the film's story.
Yeah.
In but the anyway, last film.
That was a good Terminator film in the same
Terminator
way. A good
Dark
Terminator
Fate?
Game, rather.
That's the one.
No.
It was
that's coming up soon.
Mm. I didn't think
Resistance?
It was Dark Fate. Resistance. Persistence?
Yes.
Resistance?
Dark Fate was the film that went alongside it.
But
yes.
This is RoboCop Road City, made by the same developers and the same publishers, I believe. And in very much the same way as the previous Terminator game, this is a game where it slightly shows its limited budget, but that is okay because it's not... Well, it's easier to offset because it's not a full-price game. I actually think my missus bought me this for Christmas, but I happen to know that it cost around £40 because I did the actual...
Oh, Tim, you're ruining
purchasing.
The magic of Christmas.
Ruined Christmas. It wasn't Santa Claus.
Also,
it's okay.
Also, I've started putting the prices in the agenda.
Yeah. But I got it for a little bit below retail price. This did come out a little bit before Christmas. But yeah, I was fortunate enough that I got it as a Christmas present. I've been playing on PlayStation 5. It's also available on PC and Xbox Series X and S. In much the same vein as the previous Terminator game, shows its budget a little bit, but very much is a game that has been made by big fans of the series, and they've done a good job of making it, basically.
How big? About 7 foot?
Yeah.
How big are they?
Easily 7 foot, I'd say.
Nice.
Which is about RoboCop's height, so, you know, it's good. But you do feel like a heavy, thudding, plodding, robotic kind of half-human, half-machine.
Well, of course you're plodding. You're a cop.
Yeah, exactly, as you're going around. And the makeup of this game does kind of bounce you around between an environment where you're walking around and usually solving a kind of a case that kind of has you going from different areas of the environment. But then also has some police procedurally stuff going on. But then you'll also go from there back to the police station, and then from the police station back out on patrol kind of thing. And then it kind of bounces around between those two things. And when you're in the police station, there's some like kind of slightly mundane things that they ask you to do, like get people, find some people to like do a get well card. No, you're actually doing parking tickets and stuff while you're out in the environment.
So RoboCop is doing bloody parking tickets.
Yes.
No, he's a cop. He's a robot.
Oh,
cop.
Come on. Seriously?
Yeah. No, each time that you're actually out and about in the streets, there's a list of things that you need to do under a thing called Serve and Protect. And there's like six different things that you need to find in the environment. And some of them are like writing up people for like throwing trash. Some of them are like, oh, that person's parked next to a fire hydrant, so I need to give them a ticket. In the cases where you're writing up a ticket, you just give them a ticket. In most of the other cases, you decide whether you are upholding the law or serving the public trust. And it's those kind of like decisions that kind of feed into the idea that this was definitely made by big fans of the original movies. Speaking of which, this takes place probably in the ideal place for a RoboCop game after RoboCop 2, before you start flying around and doing nonsense in RoboCop 3. So, you know, it's a good time frame to do that. When you're in the station, the other things that you do is you'll get like, have a bit of psychoanalysis going on. And it's very much, it's in that kind of cage setting that you see in the movies where he's in the basement of the police station. And you've got things there. There's also like a gun range that you can go for, like the high score on and stuff. Speaking of the gun, you've got the gun that you see in the movies that's particular to RoboCop. You can also generally pick up one other weapon in the environment, which you only really need
for writing tickets. Jesus.
Yeah. Which you only really need if your gun runs out of ammo. I say if, because you've got the gun, the iconic gun that you see from the first two films, but there's a kind of circuit board that you can put in it, and you can modify different circuit boards so that they've got different bonuses. And one of those potential bonuses is not having to reload. So you can actually have that gun so you don't reload, or you can have it so that it's set up to do more damage and more armor penetration and stuff like that. There's also a whole skill set of skills to unlock. And basically the way it works is you get like a steady bonus for each slot that you unlock. But then when you get to certain cutoff points, it gives you an extra skill as well. So there might be something where it gives you like a 10% damage reduction per thing. But then when you get the second one, it will give you a skill. When you get the fifth one, it will give you a skill. When you get the end one, it will give you a skill. And sometimes they're skills that are just upgraded as you go. And other times they're brand new skills that give you new powers like slow down time, which is particularly handy when you're kind of breaching into rooms and trying to save hostages and stuff like that. And other times it might just be a whole new skill that will disable the people around you temporarily. Like, it's kind of like a flashbang that originates from yourself.
But if you do that, Tim, they're all going to be eligible for blue badges, making a serious impact on your ability to write appropriate parking tickets. You don't want to do that. It's a debuff.
You can solve that just by shooting them all, though, Dan, so that's okay. So,
oh, that's true.
Know.
But then you can't actually give them the ticket. So again,
there's also a particular way you can disable enemies by shooting them in the nether regions that I think both of you would probably appreciate. No.
Okay. Right. Wow. So yeah. You just obliterate everything down there.
Yes.
Nice.
Again, taken from the movies. And there's lots of really nice little nods to the movies and the series in general. I don't know the extended universe beyond the films that much. I haven't really read too many of the comics and stuff, or at least not for many years. So I don't know how many other little bits and stuff there is in that. But yeah, I mean, you don't really want to go past the first two films. I haven't really noticed any nods to the remake, but that's obviously because, you know, that's kind of a separate universe. But yeah, like if you're a fan of the movies, obviously this kind of appeals to you. But I also think it's very much a kind of, it feels like a slightly backhanded compliment. It feels like a slight step back in first person shooter kind of makeup, but yeah, done to a high standard. I've really enjoyed my time with it. I'm about 15-16 hours in, and I can see me playing it to completion. There's some real nice surprises in terms of like the actual enemies you face and the things they do with that. Like, I won't spoil it, but there's it's not too much of a spoiler, but there's a motorcycle gang, and I was expecting just to go and just like there'll be a gang of bikers that shoot me rather than wasn't, but they're actually riding around on their motorbikes and shooting at you, which was a kind of something I wasn't expecting. But then you can also pick up their motorbikes and throw them at them and they explode.
Yes.
So like it's this the
and
whole
then
thing
give them
seemed,
a parking ticket because their motorbikes yes, in the yeah. wrong place. See, yeah.
But the whole thing seems
oh, no,
this well
set
this up
on
for
a single yellow your blood. Face.
Oh dear, oh dear, I better blow your crown jewels off then.
Your There's move, no dirtbag.
The Thank combat seems very much kind of geared towards just making it as fun as possible at all times. And then everything else around the game just seems as giving as much fan service as possible. And as I said, it's done really well. There's a few bits that where you're like, oh, can I get over this stonking around the station and getting people to sign a get well card, please? I'm done here. I just want to go out and shoot people in the dick. But generally, yeah. Like,
Jesus, Tim.
Generally, it's quite well paced. The combat's good fun. It does that whole kind of thing where you've got, you know, the like people go green and it does the kind of green intersecting crosshairs over them.
Oh,
when
nice.
Like target
like
them and stuff
the movie
as well.
And stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, nice.
And it's called the VAT system. As I said, it's this really good fan service, and I generally recommend it, especially if you can pick it up for less than the recommended retail price, as I was able to. So yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is ED209 in it?
Hell yes. You fight one of them. Well, you have a competition where you have to outgun them. There's various bits of the levels where it does a like an assessment test. So you're going up against cops in one stage, you're going up against Ed 209 in one stage, and you're working with him and you're like shooting enemies and stuff. But you're in competition with him to try and outgun him as well, basically. And yeah, that's quite good fun. But then you also do inevitably get into a gunfight with him as well. Not necessarily.
I have a follow up question
as part of the game or deliberately, but yeah.
Yes, are they paying stairs?
I was going to say A, stairs. Also B, have they paid such homage that all of his animations jerky and his blatantly Harry?
Oh, that'd be a good idea.
Harryhausen. Oh God, you know who I'm on about. Stop motion.
Ray Harryhausen.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yes. Yeah. I haven't necessarily seen that, but it does seem,
boom,
you know, like the authentic Ed 209 that you would want in the game, basically.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't have the claymation style animation, stop motion style animation. Yeah. I have seen that before, but you can make it fall downstairs.
And when you get shot, does it do the RoboCop meme thing?
Oh, no. Well, you don't really see yourself because it's in first person, so I don't know. He might be making that face underneath his mask for
but
all I
do
know.
You do you secretly do that on your couch when you get
well,
shot?
Well, obviously, yeah.
Good. Just double checking.
Yeah, and again, not too spoilerific, but it's the brother of the guy that shot you that's the one of the main nemesises to start with as well, so that's quite interesting and quite good. And again, reasonable fan service and stuff like that. Definitely enjoyable, definitely worth doing. The other thing that you'll hate me for mentioning, but I'm going to mention it anyway, is
menus.
This game would be great in VR, and there's a...
Boo,
I don't know if you've
shut
seen,
up.
A,
you've already had a VR game.
There's
shut
an
it.
Unreal Engine VR mod that's come to PC, and one of the games that people have been playing on that is RoboCop, and other than the cutscenes being a bit weird and stuff, apparently that works really well. This game would be brilliant in VR. I really hope someone actually brings it out on consoles at some point, but yeah.
Why not? Okay. Hibbs's leave. Let's move on.
Yes, indeed. So I've been playing catch up a little bit, and Tim, I look with disdain at your games that cost money. My game I've been playing cost me no money because I technically already bought the game and it's free DLC, but never mind. I'm going to call it a game.
Yes.
I know a lot of you have probably played this to death quite a bit already, but I finally found some time to get stuck into God of War Ragnarok's Valhalla free DLC. I think that was one of the best festive surprises that was dropped out of nowhere. So for those of you who've been living under a rock, a bit like me, this is kind of a roguelite mode brought to God of War Ragnarok, where it's all the events happen after the story. And I will do my best not to give any spoilers, but it's all very focused, Valhalla, on just the combat you do as Kratos. So you've still got access to the same weapons, but everything's kind of like you're at the base level for everything. So you've trundled off to Valhalla after the game. And, you know, initially you just think, oh, that's nice. It's just going to be like some kind of...
Is that a spoiler in itself? Like, I'm not blaming you because it's literally the title of
it's
the game.
It's in the title
Valhalla,
of the damn game, Tim.
The afterlife. Is that a spoiler?
Well.
I'm guessing so, but yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you think kind of initially, oh, it's just going to be kind of a well, you know, you'd be forgiven if you were being cynical for thinking it's just going to be, oh, it's just a series of kind of randomly generated arenas with a random selection of enemies each time off you go. But actually, it does a really nice job, not only of kind of layering in some really good roguelite elements. So there's the usual mix of permanent upgrades and kind of temporary upgrades that are unique to kind of each run. But it does tell quite a great little story as well. Again, not going to spoil it, but it's very much... it's all about Kratos coming to terms with who he is or was. But it's a real kind of the combat itself is great. It's a real kind of greatest hits of the really fantastic fluid combat in the main game. It thankfully does detect fairly swiftly that you might not have played it for a while. So it goes, hey, dumbass, you look like you're pressing random buttons. Do you want to have a little reminder of what the controls are? So that's really quite helpful.
That's quite clever. More games.
And it does the usual thing of incentivizing mixing it up. So rather than, I don't know what kind of what pattern you guys fell into when you were playing the main game, but I very much kind of went down or tended to use just one particular weapon and one particular shield because I knew it suited my play style. Whereas this actually incentivizes you to try things a bit differently and does throw some pretty nice rewards your way if you do that. So that's quite good. It kind of keeps it fresh as well. It is perhaps a bit jarring if you've just come off the main game to go straight into it because you're going from probably being quite overpowered and having all of your equipment really, really top tier to like, all right, I essentially have a pointy stick is what okay. I've got and a couple of kitchen knives on the end of a bit of rope. But
I imagine it's kind of like when you finish the first one and you're like, okay, I'm pretty much, I can take down anyone. And then you go, right, let's go take down these Valkyrie. Uh-oh.
There we go. But it's great. It really does. It doesn't feel like an afterthought. And frankly, I think they could have got away with charging money for it. And it's nice that they didn't. It's nice that there's something that's obviously had a lot of care and attention put into it. It's by no means kind of phoned in. I thoroughly recommend checking out. I mean, I would, if you haven't played God of War first, I would strongly, I mean, you can't access it unless you have a copy of God of War Ragnarok. But I would definitely check it out. It's worth reinstalling the game for, I would say. It's a probably about 5-6 hours in total. And then as kind of as much fun as you want to have trying out different builds as you do runs of it after that. But yeah, I really nice way to kind of dip my toe back into the water of Ragnarok. Might make me do a New Game Plus run at some point. But yeah, ooh, it's a corking game. All the production value of the main event, great script, great voice acting, awesome gameplay, gorgeous visuals. Yeah, really worth checking out. Best little unexpected surprise of the holiday period.
Yeah, I was actually playing I went back to the main game and was trying to complete my run through of the main story prior to picking up RoboCop. But then, yeah, RoboCop kind of distracted me from then on. But yeah, I want to go back and finish the main game so that I can pick up Valhalla at some point. But that's definitely the case. There's no way. It's definitely worth playing through the main story first.
You can play it straight away. It gives you a very big warning going.
From a story perspective, you would say play the main game and then go back.
I would. The main game story is well worth finishing off anyway. And it would rob it of some of its kind of narrative impact if you did just go straight into Valhalla. There's nothing stopping you. You do you, mate. If you want to get stuck into Valhalla, go for it. But I think you would be robbing yourself of a really nice bit of video game storytelling from the main game if you did so.
It's like watching Creed 3 before you started Rocky.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Good. Yes. I still
does
need
he
to play
die
this.
As well in Creed 3? I haven't watched Creed 3 yet.
Well, I'm not going to spoil it for you, am I? I love
Tom's already made his stance on spoilers quite clear.
Creed 4, Valhalla. Yeah.
Dang it. I really want to play Valhalla, but I also want to go back and do sidey stuff in Ragnarok first, so I don't know when I'll actually get around to this. But as I did say, like the day it came out, it got spoiled for me straight away.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and like I'm personally talking about it in vague terms. I think it's only the main story in Ragnarok that it will spoil, potentially. I think the side stuff, not so much.
No. And I think potentially, yeah, it's from what I understand, it's a bit sequel baity as well. When you do everything.
Mm. Boy.
So it's worth playing.
Interesting.
Yeah, boy.
Yes. Well worth the price of free.
Yes, many things are.
Yes, except for the not £70 video game and the £500+ PlayStation 5.
What is, God damn it, Colmore, what is
internet
up with you this year?
Power.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that's probably the most expensive bit.
Yes.
Are you done? Are you done being a miserable little sausage?
I'm not miserable. I'm looking forward to playing it. It's just that I have gone balls deep into Cyberpunk 2077. And that's all I've been playing since we've been gone. Until today.
Cyberballs deep.
I got my first new release of the 2024 for me. Ooh, that's Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown.
I did as well, but you've probably played a bit. Did you go early access on this or just sneak in an hour or so between work today?
Picked it up today, played it on my way in and my way home from work. So just a quick first impression from me. But yeah, we've spoken about this in preview previously because Tim and me have played it at different events. And this is getting away from the kind of format of Prince of Persia that went out of fashion and has gone back to the 2D style. But also it's not so, because if you don't know, the original Prince of Persia and Prince of Persia 2, they were 2D kind of platformer games, but you had to be very kind of precise in the way that you played them. This is more Prince of Persia after the devs went, wow, you guys play Dead Cells? Dead Cells is really good. You should try playing Dead Cells. And because of the style of game as well, it's got a little bit of Metroid Dread kind of look to it as well. But it is it's a Metroidvania type game. You're not the prince. The prince is someone you're trying to save, but you're a character who is running around.
Your prince is in another castle.
Yes, you're an immortal. You're looking for the Prince of Persia who's been kidnapped with your band of other immortals. You go it alone and kind of link with them along the way. And it's your kind of standard Metroidvania affair where you go, you do a bunch of platforming, you find a thing and go, well, I can't get past this thing. Must remember this at this area and I'll come back when I figure out how to break yellow blocks or open specific types
or
of grates, that kind of thing. Yes. And then there's boss fights in the kind of same style as the Metroidvanias. Most Metroidvania type games out there. So I've only played the quite tedious intro to the game, the tutorial stuff, and then a bit of the game itself.
Yeah.
But then I found once it opened up into the actual game, I did find myself kind of a little bit overwhelmed to begin with, because kind of early on in these games, you go, okay, I know which way I'm going. And then at some point, it really opens up and the skills you've picked up along the way will help you. You've got your mini map and you know what you're doing. With this one, I just feel like I'm endlessly going on and I've gone past the turn and I don't know if I took the right turn and I'm not sure what's going on, but I'm sure I'll get my head around it. If you're interested, I mean, we're going to talk about this more next week because Dan's going to play this and I'm going to play this some more, obviously. But if you're interested, it's out on PC, PS5, the Xbox Series is the Nintendo Switch, PS4, and Xbox One. And it varies between $44.99 and $49.99 because I believe there's a special edition out there as well.
Yeah, and not to influence your ratings too much, but the Metacritic rating and in general, like the reviews have been very, very favorable for this. So I'll be interested to see.
Yeah, I have seen that.
Similar.
I've seen that as well. I mean, I think I probably haven't played it. I mean, I've only probably played about as much as you, Carmen. I think I'm just kind of in probably around the same area as you. I would describe myself as whelmed by it thus far, not underwhelmed or overwhelmed. I would say I'm thoroughly whelmed.
I guess from what I've seen and the bit of play, because they said that the demo that Coleman and I had played before was a purposely made demo for showing off the game. And I guess that they know that the beginning of the game isn't necessarily a good demonstration of what the overall game is. And from that, I'd also infer that, yeah, and from what I've seen, I'm guessing that the platforming and the combat is quite unforgiving until you open up some skills and get a bit further into the game. I don't know if they just then ramp up the challenges as you go, but be interested to see how that's balanced.
I mean, it's not so much that, certainly the bits I've had, it's not so much that there's anything particularly complex about the combat system itself, because I was kind of preparing myself for like OG Prince of Persia needing to read the animations and parry appropriately. Right. It's a lot simpler than that. But at the moment, and this may, again, very early impressions, it feels a little bit one-dimensional, the combat so far. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of variety in mixing it up yet.
I think that's gonna open up as you start getting the more amulets and chains and all that kind of stuff thrown in. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm hoping the story opens up a bit better than it is, because I'm finding it quite a sleepy opening, even though it starts in like a big battle and a boss fight and stuff. I was quite bored at the opening and the tutorial stuff. And
voice acting, bit variable.
There's an interesting one about that, because there was a text-to-speech AI type thing, placeholder, that they put in the game, which was the voice of the spirit in the tree. And it's still in the full finished game because they forgot to actually cast someone and put it out. And now it's been picked up, and they went, we thought we forgot something. So they're going to replace that at some point.
Ubisoft are doing their best to distract from that narrative in other unique ways this week anyway. So,
yeah, I saw the thing about is it Ubisoft they're doing the foam stars, or is that... That's
Squeenix. It's kind of like, all right, so someone's played Splatoon then.
Well, it wasn't that. Someone was kicking off about there's AI generated art within the game.
No, there is a lot of AI generated.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, I don't know. I hope I'm going to be. I hope my early impressions aren't indicative of what it's going to be like. It's got an okay beginning at the moment, but I'm hoping it picks up.
I'm hoping it's the opposite to Metroid Dread for me, because that was one I went into and went, I'm really enjoying this, and I got to a point and just fell off it massively. I'm hoping it's the other way, where it's a sleepy opening and it just ramps up at some point and I go, this is amazing, I have to play this all the time. So very interesting. All right, should we do some news?
Let's do some news. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Excellent. News. Speaking of Ubisoft,
it's like we planned that.
So I thought this would be an interesting point of discussion, because there's you might have heard the news that Ubisoft Plus has now opened up into two different subscription types. You've got Ubisoft Plus Premium and Ubisoft Plus Classics, one which will be for the classic games and one which will be for the new shiny games. And there was the director of subscriptions at Ubisoft, who did an interview with GI Biz, Philippe Tremblay. Who said
that sounds like a made up French name.
All names are made up in France and everywhere else.
I mean, all names are made up. They're all just sounds.
All
Tim.
Words
all
are
just
made
sounds.
Up. That was the phrase I was looking for. So going in and kind of describing how the landscape of subscription services work and how they should be going forward. He basically alluded to saying that gamers need to get comfortable not owning their games, and that's how subscriptions are going to work. And the way he's likened it is remember we used to have loads of VHS and loads of DVD and loads of Blu-ray and like just physical media, and now we don't because of streaming services, unless like that film that you really want to watch doesn't exist anywhere, and then you end up buying it. He didn't mention that bit. That was just me. I've been buying a lot of films lately because I want to watch them, and they just don't exist anywhere. But yes, he kind of likened it to that. And I thought it was an interesting thing to get your guys' thoughts on.
Well, you know this will trigger Tim, don't you?
The annual reminder.
I think you're fine.
Regular reminder that
no
you
one's
don't
owned
own
a
game.
Yeah, in
you
the
never
party.
Bought a game before. Yeah, oh, there you go.
Jesus, here we go.
But I did actually see an interesting comment on Threads today, which I thought was probably
a response
to this.
Oh, you're the one person using it.
There's a few of us now. Come on, Threads. There was someone made an interesting point that I don't entirely necessarily agree with, but I did think it was interesting. They said, well, if you don't technically own games, then are you really technically pirating them? Like, you can't be charged with pirating if you don't own them, like, kind of thought, but I'm not sure that's entirely correct. I'm not sure that will stand up in a court of law.
That's not quite how piracy law works. However,
yes, exactly.
I would say if you can't technically own the games, should you technically be paying for them? So forget piracy. Yes. Like, should they be charging us for something that we don't own?
Well, I don't know if you've seen.
Or should
well,
they be called?
Just
to quickly finish that point. It's because I get the idea of a subscription service, it's like a Netflix or something. But if you're giving us a physical product that we don't own. Say we buy a physical game and we don't own that game because it can go offline at any time or whatever, then should they really be charging us for said game? Because you're giving us a service, but that service should not be a thing that I can hold in my hand. Oh, look, it's Forspoken, everyone.
I still haven't forgiven that game.
Not forgiven, Forspoken.
No.
I don't know if you saw as well, Game announced this week that they are ending next month. Not they selling are ending games. Physical yep. trade-ins. You'll no longer be yep. able yeah. to trade games in a game. So
that's it, so weird.
Just leaving CEX. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what their business model is going to be if they're not selling toys. Secondhand games anymore.
Yeah, didn't they Funko get bought out by, just toys they got Funko bought out by a much bigger company? And it's
yeah, they're owned by Sports Direct now. That's why yep. most game stores are within Sports Direct.
Yeah.
Oh, did not know yeah, that.
That's that guy. Who's the guy who owns Sports Direct? The one Tim really likes, who owns like all the football teams.
Clunge face. What's his name, Tim?
It's your favourite.
Mike Ashley. He is a
that's
not
him.
Good
Tim's mate.
What a lovely guy. He's almost as nice when, as that
when Newcastle fans absolutely hated him. But yeah, he doesn't sound like a good person to work for or a good person to give money to be honest. But yeah, like I just think
why'd you give him all that money?
Well, yeah. But I don't know. It's one of those things where physical media does seem to be going away. And I didn't mention before, but I got a physical copy of RoboCop, by the way. So either of you two can borrow my RoboCop when I'm done with
it. Away.
Which apparently is illegal, but that's nevertheless true. But yeah, it
I
does seem
like... I swapped
you
for a copy of Forspoken.
I'm all right, mate.
It does seem like we're
don't
heading
don't
for...
Don't risk getting a parking ticket yeah. from RoboCop about it.
It does seem like we're heading towards a future where we won't have physical games, but also yep. we'll be charged as much for the digital versions. I can't see Sony and Microsoft going, all right, we'll lower the prices now that there's no physical game store. Because their argument has always been, well, if we can't sell them... physically through other places, we can't reduce the price of the digital games because then all the stores will get annoyed. Well, what happens when the stores aren't selling physical copies of games anymore? Like, I don't know. It's going to be an odd situation coming up, but I can't see.
Yeah. First, they came for the digital top-up cards and it didn't affect me. Then they came for the physical games and it didn't affect me. And then they just broke into my house and hit me PlayStation as well, annoyed. Yep. Bloody Nazis.
Yep. So, that escalated. I don't know. I mean, I think to your earlier point, Tim, right? Because there was some brouhaha in the same breath.
Good word.
I know. Which I think slightly got subtly different arguments mixed up with one another. So they're turning off, like, The Crew is a Ubisoft game. And they are turning off the servers for that
game.
The first one. Okay.
They're turning off the servers for it. People said, oh, it means you don't own a game anymore. So, well, actually, that's slightly a bit different. I mean, as you were saying, Tim, technically, you own a license to run that game. And they are, and the fact that they're decided to no longer continue running the server on which it is dependent, that's a subtly different thing.
Yeah.
Now, I can see, I think for me, subscription services are all about, is it fairly priced for what you're getting? Because I actually think a subscription service, just to come back to your point, Tim, if you don't actually own anything, you just own a license to play it, actually, from a consumer point of view, is a subscription a bit more transparent from that point of view? It's very obvious that you are putting some money in order to gain access to that product for a limited time. You don't own anything. It's obvious that that's the case. So in some ways, I am being devil's advocate here. Is that actually more transparent and more kind of honest with the consumer? But I do think these things need to be priced correctly, and I'm starting to cringe a bit at all these different levels of, like, you get PlayStation
the
Plus
base
Essential
game, the Silver
versus
Silver,
all that and all, stuff, and all of that stuff, where it's kind of they're structuring these things to extract as much money from users as possible, because it's like, all right, the lower price stuff's all right, but really, this is the one you want, but the way as a consumer that you can actually really only get the best value out of these things, if you are consistently playing these games, I think if you're churning through a high volume of games every month, subscription services make a lot of financial sense. It's cheaper in terms of getting access to the games. It's going to be a lot cheaper to do it that way.
I don't know about you. I'd like owning games. And I still buy physical games every now and again. I still tend towards that if I'm especially when I'm not bothered about a VR game, I'll tend towards the physical VR. Copy, like I did.
No, nope, can't one put it away.
But at the same time, like, there's a limit to how many games I can fit in my house. I don't tend to go back and play old games as much as, almost as much as I think I do, kind of thing. I mean, like, there is an element of, we are doing this podcast and so we tend to go for a new game and get stuck into that cycle of things. But at the same time, even if that wasn't a factor, I'm not sure how much I'd go back to years old games. There are still games that I want to go back and play and replay, but...
I think the challenge becomes, though, that we're now getting so many different kind of subscription offerings. There's obviously Game Pass, there's PlayStation Plus, and, you know, it's like, okay, fine, they're two separate systems. But then when you layer on top of that the Ubisoft stuff and the EA stuff, it starts getting very expensive. Yeah. And actually, the business model of these things is for you to have a regular subscription but not actually playing any of the content that month. So I think if we do go subscription services, I think, you know, it's a good way to perhaps dip in and trot. Like, if there's a game that's just come out that's only on, say, Game Pass Ultimate, it's probably worth just dropping a month subscription just to play that game, treat it like that, get out the bottom. But I think we've got to all kind of keep the industry a bit honest about the pricing structure, because otherwise we're essentially going to be paying money for nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
but I think we'll see a reduction in the number of subscription services for TV. I can't see Paramount Plus lasting that many years. I think we'll start seeing them actually pay.
What do you
down.
Mean? That Halo show's great on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine and everything, but
I love seeing Master Chief's face all the time.
Can't see them all surviving. But Star then Trek's I also, I think we'll see a similar thing in the video game industry.
And Frasier?
I can actually see...
No, hang on.
Apparently the new one's not good.
I need to interrupt. I used to like Frasier.
Still love
until Frasier. Until I discovered Kelsey Grammer is a
Trump.
No, don't ruin it. No, he is. He loves a bit of Trump.
I mean, he's no Roseanne that's, Barr. No,
that's fine. He can like who the hell he likes, but I like Frasier.
Oh, it really put me off it anyway.
Also, he's the perfect beast casting.
Eggs. He is a good beast.
He's a good beast.
He's the perfect beast.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've seen, but Xbox are kind of putting around... Well, there's rumors that Xbox are going to be putting some of their games like Hi-Fi Rush on other systems such as Switch and PS5. But I also think it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we'll see Xbox not launch a console in the next cycle and just exist on other consoles. I think that's the way Game Pass might go. And then... it becomes a better value proposition when you're not having to shell out for another console and you're just accessing a library of games that Xbox owns. And I think that could actually work out well for the consumers going forward. It could work out very badly, but I suspect it might be okay.
It is funny because the quote was actually, I think it was along the lines of, we want to see Xbox games played on every screen. Which everyone took as, oh my god, Xbox are going to start putting games out on PlayStation and Nintendo Switch. Like,
no,
they've invested
fridges.
A lot of money into cloud gaming and apps on your TV and your phone and stuff. Yeah. Like, they're just going to keep doing that platform, I think. But they've dabbled before. They've developed, they've published traditionally Xbox exclusive games to Nintendo Switch before, so I can see them doing that again. And they even, like when they bought Mojang, they were still publishing Minecraft to different platforms. I think just after that acquisition, it came to PlayStation Vita. So, you know.
Yes. Oh, the Vita. Oh, that I'm just going to start reminiscing about that if you're not careful.
Can pick yourself up a PlayStation Portal then.
The subscription thing, it was a cool idea when Xbox went, right, we really need to revamp this idea because no one's bothering with Game Pass, or we haven't got the subscribers that we quite need to. Here's the thing. We're going to start launching all of our games on there, like our first party titles on there. And now as they've started buying more companies, it's like, okay, our first party games, except for these ones. And now it's, and again, as you say, like PlayStation have revamped their PlayStation Plus to be a bit more, not as good, but a bit more in line with what Xbox is offering. Then you've got Ubisoft, then you've got EA, then you've got, I think are Epic doing something as well? Like, there's a bunch of different things that are going on now with different subscription services.
But it does,
and it's the same thing as when...
Sorry, go on.
And it's the same thing as when this happened with the streaming services for TV. Netflix came about. Everyone had Netflix and went, this is amazing. Yeah. You don't need anything else. Just get Netflix. And then people start cancelling their cable and cancelling their satellite and what have you, and going off to streaming services. Cable cutting, it was affectionately known as. And now everyone's going back to those services because there are so many streaming services that everything is divvied out. If you want all the content that you regularly watch, you're better off just having the regular TV again. So, that's exactly what's happening with game streaming now as well. And it's that same thing, like I said, when we were likening the guys likening DVDs to video games. At one point you had all this physical media and now you just stream it all. It's like, yes, I did. And in an ideal world, that'd be the thing I do. But every time there's something I really want to watch and I go like, it's Christmas, I want to watch National Lampoon's Holiday Vacation. Where is it on what streaming service? None of them. I have to buy it. Okay, I'll just buy it. And then I know I'm not going to have this problem every Christmas.
Yeah.
That's a fairly niche problem, I'm not going to lie.
Well, I have bought a lot of films because it comes to the time of year or whatever season where like they go, you're going to want to watch this film, and they just take it off the streaming platforms for free for that very reason, because they want to sell it to you.
Aren't we a very cynical bunch this year?
I've got lots of problems with streaming, but I just don't. I'd need a whole show to talk about all my issues with streaming services, to be honest.
And another thing, that's the title of your new podcast. And another thing.
And another thing. I've been looking for an idea. Right. I thought it'd be an interesting thing to discuss as like a main topic. And I'm trying some different things and it seems to have worked. Some quick headlines we'll run through because we are out of time. If you don't know, the two founders of Rocksteady, Hill and Walker, Stefan Hill and Jamie Walker,
kind of they disappointed actually, they're not called Mr. Rock and Mrs. Steady.
No, unfortunately not.
Yeah, that would have been
they
great.
Actually left Rocksteady back in October 2022 while the Suicide Kill the Justice League was being developed. And they've now announced that they formed a new studio with a lot of ex-Rocksteady devs, but they've got 100 industry veterans and emerging talents, according to their LinkedIn. The new studio is going to be called 100 Star Games. So keep an
eye
out
for what
they're doing.
I have to say, I completely forgot that when we were talking about having faith in Rocksteady to produce a good game with Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. Do
it's
we think BioWare, Suicide Squad are also going to kill Rocksteady as well as the Justice League?
Possibly, but there's a lot of questionable things going on at Warner Brothers over the last couple of years, and video games are no different. Yeah. And I don't know if you saw the thing of all the previews went out.
I've seen the thing.
And Warner Brothers weren't happy with... Sorry, Warner Brothers Inter, Kurt I have Russell. To specify... Warner Brothers Interactive were not happy with the reception given by the previews, so they released the embargo. They lifted the embargo on people that played the beta build, just like influencers and stuff. So all this new content flooded out because they were hoping for better reactions that way. Because I don't know if you know this, if you're an influencer getting free access to stuff, you tend to be a little bit more friendly for free things in hopes that you get more free things.
So.
The only person that I saw being not really critical of the Justice League was SkillUp. And he was like, it's not, I don't hate it, basically, was his tagline.
Which is very different to a glowing endorsement, let's be perfectly clear.
But everyone else was like, I hate this, and here's why. Here's the 20 reasons I hate the Justice League.
So, okay, this gameplay is fun. Unfortunately, it's a live service of a four-player like battle-type thing. It's going to become very repetitive. The way they've structured the characters they don't feel like the characters because everyone's just firing guns. However, it's a really good story. They went, okay, so that saved me £70, and I'm looking forward to watching all those cutscenes on YouTube.
Excellent.
It's Gotham Knights all over again.
I don't know about you. I might pick it up when it's like £20 or £25 maybe even.
No, servers will be shut down by then.
Wow. Someone got burned hard by Avengers.
Oh.
No, I really like Avengers still.
But they shut your servers down, Coleman.
They shut your servers.
Anyway.
You don't own a game, Coleman.
But they've not shut it down.
Are they gonna?
They're still going. It's just not Squeenix anymore. Oh. Yeah. They've just stopped making new content for it. They've still got the game. It's still playable. It's still online. It's just kind of running in maintenance mode, I guess. Anyway. So that's Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. That's coming out on the 2nd of February. I know this wasn't about Justice League Kill the Suicide Squad, but sorry, other way around. Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Yeah, but we somehow got into that.
So let's give it a little plug at the end anyway. new video game adaptations, because, you know, Suicide Squad to that's that film, and now it's a video game, and now we'll go the other way around.
Good film.
Good film. Martha is Dead. I don't know if you guys remember this one. This is a psychological thriller that came out a few years ago. Wired Productions. They've announced that they're going to be making a film adaptation of this game. But here's the more interesting one. I threw this in just for you, Tim. Sony have announced that they're making an Until Dawn video game. The latest of the PlayStation video games to be made into films. And really quite impressively, so the script's been written by Blair Butler, who he wrote The Invitation, and it's the script's now being buffed out by, what's his name, Gary Duberman, who did It, Annabelle, and The Nun, and the director is David F. Sandberg, who, if you don't know, Lights Out, Annabelle Creation, and Shazam 1 and 2.
Oh,
nice.
Not bad. He seems like a really nice guy, and quite a geek.
I heard someone, I think it was on Game Mess Morning I was listening to earlier today. And one of them suggested that this would be good in a Cluedo style, like as in having various
switch out the endings for different.
And that would be really good. I'd really like that. I'd really like that. They do something along those lines. Or, it'd be interesting to see if this is like. This could be made in the kind of Netflix model of, you know, having an interactive kind of element to it or something as well.
That could be
quite interesting.
I just want to watch a dang film. Stop messing with my films.
Either of those things.
Coleman's gone full middle-aged grumpy bugger today, hasn't he?
When you start talking about gimmicks to films, I just instantly think back to Avatar 2, Way of the Water. It's like, I really wanted to enjoy that film, but all the 4DX gimmicky crap really put me off that film. I've yet to watch it at home.
Still haven't watched it. When you fancy watching it at home at some point, let's do that.
Cool. I would like to throw out some fan casting for this film, by the way. I was thinking maybe you could get Hayden Panettiere and Rami Malek.
Yes.
I think they'd be good in this film adaptation.
Yes.
Don't know what they're doing these days. I think it'd be a good idea to like bring those in, but reverse the roles, you know, bad guy be the good guy be the bad guy.
But the only thing is that they were both a bit younger then, and it's kind of a bit of a teenage horror slasher type thing, and you might need people again.
I think then they were kind of aged out of the roles, but thanks to the marvels of technology, they were able to look younger because it's a video game. And if only Disney had been developing some sort of de-aging process that has been used in films for the past, I don't know, 20-something years. All right, very, very quickly. We're going to skip that last one. Very quickly as well. Billy Mitchell, not the character from EastEnders, but notorious bad man of video games because of, what was that film, King of Kong?
A King of Kong,
yes.
King of Kong.
The greatest video game movie of all time.
Yes. Anyway, so Billy Mitchell, there was some question. He's kind of painted as a bad guy in that documentary, The King of Kong, which is about someone trying to get the all-time score for King Kong. And Billy Mitchell has been he's been accused of faking his lead, scoreboard records, because if you don't know, he had the highest score for Pac-Man. That's where he got his notoriety for. And then at some point he had like the highest score for King Kong, but it's now a lot lower than it used to be. But still, he's on these scoreboards for a company called Twin Galaxies, who one day went, hey, let's start tracking video game scoreboards. And now they're like the authority for it, for specifically classic games. Billy Mitchell, he got called out for using MAME instead of an actual legitimate arcade board, and there was called into question of tampering and all this kind of stuff, and all his video game high scores got removed from the leaderboards, and now he has won a court case as of 2 days ago as we're recording. And Twin Galaxies has now reinstated all of his records, which he's very happy with.
Big cheese.
If you haven't seen it, go watch The King of Kong. It's quite outdated now to a lot of the information. Like, Twin Galaxies is a lot bigger than it used to be.
Need a sequel or an update.
Yeah, the way they do the revisit Ding or something. The way they do the ways of getting the scores. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. It's quite an old film now. Was it like 2005, I think, that film came out?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still worth watching. It's very interesting. But yeah, Billy Mitchell, he's back. He's back in the charts and back in our hearts.
Yeah.
No.
Go. Yeah.
Never in our hearts. Boo.
Let's get some Billy Mitchell's hot Big, sauce to cheat. Celebrate. Let's all get us some American flag ties.
No.
Some long hair wigs. Grow
no.
Beards. Yep.
No.
I'm already there. And we'll drink hot sauce to celebrate Billy Mitchell's victory to gain his way back into the Twin Galaxy scoreboards.
I mean, honestly,
he's a big cheat.
Who really cares?
Possibly. Allegedly.
Allegedly cheated according to all information apart from himself and this court case.
He had an engineer hired to basically show that the things that they were saying were issues because of MAME and chopping up footage and all this kind of stuff. It turned out that it's more likely that he was recording on a VHS and then copied that VHS constantly or overwrote it constantly and degraded the ribbon in the VHS now. That's what they're saying anyway.
Who am I
to argue with science and technology, Tim?
And I suppose there's the
You're
thing
Coleman.
That... That technically they can't validate that it is exact, or they felt they couldn't validate it's exactly the same as playing it on the physical arcade machine if you're emulating. So
yes.
I'd imagine that.
Anyway.
All a thing.
I mean, in hindsight, it's a very silly court case.
Yeah.
Do you see the guy who, do you see the kid who beat Tetris?
Yeah, did the kill.
Like 13 years old, first one to get a kill screen on it.
Yeah,
amazing.
Good work.
I thought Tim was good at Tetris. Beaten by a 13-year-old child.
I don't think I've ever
Not
played
for the, first time.
The NES version. I've played a hell of a lot of the Game Boy version. I don't think I've ever played the original NES version, though.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
Not like that, Tim. Not like that.
No. No.
Let's...
No. Never like that.
Shall we wrap up?
I think we should. Right.
Good idea.
Oh, thank you for...
it's a way to go out on the first episode of the year.
Yeah,
thanks,
thank
Dan.
You for, yeah, that's all right. Thank you for tolerating us as we get our eye back in with this. But what I have to do, of course, is remind you that you should go to tpublic.com/stores/BRB. By my face.
By Dan's face.
By my face. If TeePublic, if we could ever have a discount code, I want it to be by my face.
By my face.
I will speak to them and see what I can do.
Yeah, exactly. So,
like really badly spelled as it shouted, you know? Like
by my face.
M-A-F-A-Z. F-A-Z. Face.
There we go. So, yes, there are other things that are probably superior products that don't have my face on, but there is lots of things with my face on.
That's
you can buy things to put on your face that have my face. So, yes, tpublic.com/stores/BRB. Tim, Tuesday is a Tuesday. Tell us what's happening this Tuesday on
Tuesday
Tabletop Tuesday.
Tuesday is indeed a Tuesday, but what's happening this Tuesday, Dan, is someone else's birthday. Because someone else is hiring out the whole of Loading Bar, and is no Tabletop Tuesday this Tuesday. So we'll be on the 30th of January. Yes.
I have a question. Will you get in trouble if people turn up?
I mean, no, but there is a bouncer on the door, so he won't let you in. So, yeah.
Is he a nice bloke, the bouncer?
I don't know. He's a friend of a friend, but I don't know him.
I think you should turn up, have a little chat with him.
Here's the swerve, guys.
I know whose birthday it is. I could probably get away with blagging my way in, but no one else can actually go. But yeah, no event this week. We have had a couple of really good weeks. We had a really popular week for Blood in the Clock Tower last week, which we're doing every week. I've also, there's a new poster. There's a new poster up in loading advertising Tabletop Tuesday, and a new poster advertising our Blood in the Clock Tower ones. Also, keen-eyed viewers of our website, readers, might have noticed that we actually have a new Tabletop Tuesday logo, which I will be incorporating into some new t-shirt designs coming up soon. But yeah. So we do have some new stuff, but we don't have an event this week, but we will be back on the 30th and every week this year thereafter. So join us on the 30th of January, where I hope to possibly have an advanced copy of my game for people to play. So we'll see if that happens in time. It's dependent on me getting a bit of time to do some work on it.
You're making a game.
But yeah.
Is this the same game from like 1,000 years ago that you made me test play?
Don't think so. It's a game called Trivia Traitor. It is a trivia game with a traitor mechanic. Yeah.
That sounds less complicated than the one you made me play.
That's why I have a question. This one first. Yes.
I have a question. Does someone have to wear a Claudia Winkleman fringe?
Yes, obviously. Otherwise, you know.
Right, yeah. Good. Excellent.
I actually started making it before the traitors was a thing as well, but still.
You are Claudia Winkleman.
Why are you putting up?
It's her fringe.
She's got the back fringe.
It's as if her fringe.
I
was
know
covering
it's her fringe.
Your face.
I was wondering what the hell Coleman was flouting,
to
waving
be fair,
in front of his camera.
He's not used to having a fringe. It's a nice thing for him. It's change.
I do miss having
change
a fringe.
Is as good as a rest.
Does he used to have a Paul Newcomen fringe? Oh, you went full emo fringe. Nice. Is that what you used to do? When you woke up in the morning, your fringe just kind of pneumatically lifted back off your eye.
Yeah, I'd sort of blow it up and go, "Where are you?"
Right.
That's emo, right?
Right.
Hey, guys, I want to say, if you've enjoyed the show, you've got very weird taste, but we'd love it if you go over to give us a review on whatever podcasting platform you're listening to us on. A nice 5-star would be preferable, and you can go on there and say all the fun things you like about Tim. That would be a good idea. Just everyone praise Tim in the reviews. 5-star. I love Tim. Tim Hibbs. We love Tim. Tim's face. Tim's head. Tim.
I especially liked it when he showed me his belly button.
It's not. It's Tim Hibbs. It's a good thing to do. Do that. Also, you can find us on bigredbarrel.com. We have our each and every episode that we host is on that there website. We've also got a comment section where you can leave us comments and questions and things and put it on bigredbarrel.com for us to read. We have a link to our Discord there. We also have a Facebook and an X and a Threads at Big Red Barrel. And we also have YouTube, Big Red Barrel TV. Links to all those are available in the show notes. No questions this week, because although we still have some left over from last year, which sounds weird when you say at the start of the year, it's that thing, you know, when you're going away from work and you go, see you next year. Ha 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 ha. We've still got questions from last year.
You work in a fun just don't place.
I know. Wow. We're out of time. That's all.
Yes.
But send your questions in and we will start reading them out again. So sort of slowly switching the show around in the background and trying to make things flow a little better, and the editing process and all that kind of stuff. We're trying things this year. We're going to do
butter.
Some stuff.
That's what Com's using. He's using butter. He's going to
that's
help
why my head's
it
so
lubricates
shiny.
The show process.
I go in, I go into the work fridge. They've got these little packets of butter, and I like to...
Well,
they're too hard to spread on the
later.
Toast. So I just like put it around me warm head.
Nice. I have a question. Do you leave the foil on or take the foil off?
Off. Obviously off.
Because I would use it, I would kind of splay out the foil, so I then don't grease up my hand. I'm only greasing up my heat.
Oh, that's a good idea. Just grease up my heat.
Grease up your
heat. back at butter knife. Scrape it off top.
Lovely.
Leaves it with a lovely sheen.
It does.
You see.
And what you could do, right? You could kind of put toast crumbs on one half of your head and make it look
like
you're edgy.
Don't like that, then.
No, you don't like it. You don't want a gluten-based hairstyle.
Not a fan of toast crumbs on Ed.
Right, anyway, this is getting very strange. Oh, we're going to go.
And for some reason, Northern.
Yeah. Hey, up, Chuck. Hey, up, back up later, Timothy.
Fox spoken.
So remember, if you think this show's been drink greatly, all you need to do is go on to podcast app, give us 5-star rating, and talk about
five
how you like Tim's belly button. What?
5-star rating. Don't know where this is going.
Neither do I. We're going
to
go
on to Apple Podcast. Give us 5-star.
I think it's all time. I think it's time we all had a bit of a lie down. So we're going to go now. Thank you so much for listening. All that remains is to remind you that I have been Dan.
I might have been Tim.
I have been the bouncer over at Loading Bar, stopping you entering to play Tabletop Tuesday because it's a birthday tonight. I do look quite bouncery today. I've got my bouncer jacket on. I'm there to say, what's that? Oi, no dodecahedrons.
Oi,
out of here.
Oi, is that a D20? Jog on, mate. We're going.
You take that copy of Clue. No, what do we have it? What? Love letter. There you go. Get out of here with your love letter. If your love letter's not that, you're not coming in. Get on the guest.
I
no
have
trainers.
A Star Wars version of love letter called Jabba's Palace, which is
do you have to pass a 19 charisma check? Is what you have to do. That's what if you go to Tabletop Tuesday.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yep.
You have to do that. We're going. We're talking rubbish. We all need to lie down. I think that's quite clear. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. And until next time, dear listeners, toodle bye.
You and your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.